It's music by Takeyoshi Yoshioka from his Divertimento for Percussion Ensemble, a march of the first movement of three. And performance by, well, I guess I'm going to have, well, we'll find out in a second. This is Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. That's one of the pieces that will be performed by the University of Illinois Percussion Ensemble. And they're titling that concert Yoshioka Plays Yoshioka. We'll get an explanation on that in a minute from the director of the ensemble, who is William Mersch, head of the percussion division at the University of Illinois. And we've got a lot of percussion on the program today. Coming up later, we'll talk with Adam Rudolph, who is billed mostly as a world music percussionist, also a jazz percussionist and improviser. He's on campus for a couple of events. One of them is tonight, a workshop that'll be in the, one of the music buildings. And also, then tomorrow night, a sudden sound concert at Krannert Art Museum on the U of I campus. But first up, we have Professor Mersch to talk about not only the UI Percussion Ensemble concert, but also his duo recital with his colleague in the department, Ricardo Flores, which is happening this Saturday. And also we'll mention a couple of other percussion programs. University of Illinois Steel Band and World Percussion Ensemble will be performing on November the 19th. So lots of things to talk about. Bill, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Glad to be here.
Who performed the piece we just heard?
Well, I know that Takeyoshi was playing. I'm not sure about the other two. It's a piece for three marimbas.
And your marimba studio ought to be pretty strong, given that that's a specialty of yours.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, on Tuesday's concert, we're welcoming two guest artists, Takeyoshi Yoshioka and Reiko Shiohama, both Japanese marimbas. And then I am joining them on that particular piece.
Which has to be a lot of fun. Well, tell me about these folks, since they seem to be special enough to bring to the program, and apparently have written some good music.
They have. Actually, Takeyoshi wrote the music. The entire program that we're doing is all percussion ensemble compositions of his. It starts with a marimba duo, then a marimba trio, then a marimba quartet, then a feature for marimba with four percussionists, and then a feature for marimba and timpani with four percussionists.
So obviously the emphasis on marimbas this particular
yes.
round. You tend to go a little cyclical on your percussion ensemble concerts. I don't know if they're necessarily cyclic or just tend to be thematic in what type of instruments you use per concert.
Well, I try to come up with some idea to hold it all together. And it's usually the case that some kind of a keyboard focus is part of that cycle. I'm already planning out this next semester's concert, which is going to be completely different, so... Yes.
Do we know the theme yet, or are we just going to hold on to
that? We don't really know the theme. I know the program, but I haven't come up with a theme yet to tie it together.
Ah, well, sometimes one goes one way, sometimes
right.
one goes the other way. I've certainly done both when I'm programming. You come up, well, so for this one, I assume that that the guest artist was the impetus for the program.
Yes, well, Takeyoshi and I have been communicating, corresponding with each other for probably several decades at this point. It started when I formed a group in New York, the New York Quintet, marimba-based ensemble. It's marimba, flute, clarinet, double bass, and percussion. And that was modeled after a group in Japan, the Tokyo Quintet, founded by Keiko Abe, who was one of the real leaders in the marimba movement starting in the late 60s. So I formed the New York group sort of in emulation of the Tokyo group and corresponded with Keiko Abe, and we exchanged repertoire and so on and so forth. And then Takeyoshi got in touch with me because he had formed a third generation known as the Pleiades Quintet, and they were all students of the members of the Tokyo Quintet. And so we've had this ongoing exchange of repertoire that we've been commissioning and so on and so forth. I last saw Takeyoshi at the Marimba 2010 Festival in Minnesota, where we were both performing. And he suggested the idea of teaming up for a project involving his compositions. It's been through a few evolutions in the prevailing 4 years, but now it's focusing on his larger ensemble music, percussion ensemble music, and that's where this concert came from.
That's where this concert came from. And we should say when we say Tuesday, we're talking about next Tuesday, November the 12th. At the Follinger Great Hall, the Krannert Center in Urbana, which is where your recital with Ricardo Flores is happening this Saturday.
Right.
In my promo for today's show, I sort of pitched it as drummers and other percussionists generally find themselves in the back of whatever ensemble that they are in, whether it's a band or an orchestra or, you know, a jazz trio or anything like that. They're sort of relegated to the back, which is not necessarily the right word for it, because often they provide the backbone of whatever the ensemble is in some way or another.
Right, but they're not the lead person.
They're not the lead. Yeah. Right, unless they're Buddy Rich or you know, Gene Krupa or somebody who, you know, they named their trio after. Of course, they, I don't know, they might sit in the front for all I know, but probably not. Do you have to, when you're working with your students, do you have to give them a different approach for when they're in the front versus when they're in the back? Does it make any difference?
Yes, it does, as a matter of fact. The training that we give to the students at the university focuses on all kinds of different applications. So they all have to do solo performance, they all have to do chamber performance, they all have to do large ensemble or orchestral performance. And yes, each situation is slightly different. If you're in the back, you first of all have to learn to respond appropriately to the conductor's gesture, allowing for that distance and a time lag that is caused thereby. Plus the whole other ramification that if you're in a large orchestra, pretty much you're doing whatever the music director wants you to do. The interpretation is largely coming from the podium. And yet in chamber ensemble and in solo performance, that's turned completely around, and the individual has to be responsible for that. So there's a big part of our attention is getting that across to students.
But ensemble performance in which the percussionist or drummer, who is of course a percussionist, is part of a group in which they're probably the only percussionist, they have to use their ears differently, or at least have in mind some different things than in this case where you're full of percussionists and they're not competing for volume.
Well, there are a number of different factors. As you say, some of the key issues, it's not that different from other ensemble. The key issues in percussion ensemble are intonation is not such a big issue except for the timpanist, but aspects of balance, aspects of ensemble, in other words, togetherness in the rhythm and so on and so forth, those are still crucially important. And it is a slightly different type of listening and responding that has to go along. Paradoxically, I'm always encouraging the percussionist to play with other non-percussion instruments in chamber music as much as possible. When percussionists work together, there's a tendency for each of them to sort of rely on their own internal sense of rhythm and time and decide that this is where a note should be played according to where my internal metronome is telling me it should be played. And a percussion ensemble, there's a certain tendency for each of the players to have that kind of a concept. And it's only when you start to put them together with string or wind or brass or other musicians who don't rely on that same kind of concept for making an entrance that I find to be the best educational experience for percussionists, to learn that there are different types of attack and there are different types of rhythm, and something can be rhythmic without being metronomical.
Yesterday I talked with James Galway on the program, and one of the questions that I asked him was some form of what interested him in getting out from the orchestra where he played for a long time to becoming the soloist, the person who's in the front. And I know that you do a lot of orchestral playing in which, you know, you're in the back, as it were. And then here in your recital, you get a chance to come back out front. What's especially rewarding about that, although it's probably obvious, to do that, meaning as the soloist?
Yes, there's a certain amount of enjoying the aspect of being the focus of attention on stage and being individually responsible for everything that's happening musically. That's a big payoff. It's also not quite what you might expect in an orchestral situation. I play timpani and Sinfonia da Camera and CU Symphony and so on and so forth. And although I'm in the back, there's the leading musicians in any orchestra are the first violin and the first trumpet and the timpanist. Those three sort of determine the ensemble sound, and that's not the entirety of its sound, but especially where the attack happens, when the orchestra comes in. And those three really, first of all, they're supposed to be the highest paid positions in any orchestra, in reflecting that. And those three determine when the sound starts, and the rest of the orchestra, for better or worse, follows like sheep behind those people. And hopefully they're doing it close enough that it works rather than lagging behind. So there's still an aspect of sort of leading from the back, as you were mentioning before, in a big band, if the drummer is the headliner or something, they could really be leading the band from the back. The timpanist has the same kind of function in an orchestra. And although interpretive decisions and so on and so forth are coming from the podium, there's still a fair amount of aspects of control or influence that are happening from those principal chairs.
Of course, the other appeal, I assume, to giving your own concert is that you get to play a lot of different instruments, and you know, feature a lot of different kinds of music in a way, of course, that just doesn't happen in the orchestra. So, for example, we have something that's going to be on your recital on Saturday.
Yes, we do. The piece we're talking on the concert on Saturday, we're doing a combination of things. We're playing four Argentine tangos that are arranged for marimba and vibraphone duo. And then we're intermingling that with various duo and solo percussion pieces. So this next one is probably one of the more well-known of the tangos. It's by Astor Piazzolla.
And the marimbas in this recording, you have to tell me how to pronounce these guys' names.
Okay. This is a former student of mine from Argentina. His name is Angel Frete. And I don't remember if it's Fabian or Oscar that's on this.
Fabian.
All right.
The vibraphonist.
And Fabian is a student of Angel's. Angel is the mallet player in the Buenos Aires Philharmonic.
Carol Glanyan or something like that. Yeah, music by Astor Piazzolla. This will be one of the pieces on the recital with University of Illinois faculty percussionists William Mersch and Ricardo Flores Saturday night at 7:30 at the Kraner Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. I'm talking with Bill Mersch here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. Well, if you're a fan of Astor Piazzolla's music, you probably recognize the tune, but I'm pretty sure you probably haven't heard that particular arrangement. The arranger here, Lincoln Antonio, of a piece called Adios Nonino, and I understand from William Mersch just a few minutes ago that it's named after Piazzolla's father. You did say father, right? Not
yes.
Grandfather. Yeah.
Father.
Performers here on marimba, Angel Frete, and on vibraphone, Fabian, I'm going to not say this right, Caro Glanian or something like that. That's one of the pieces that William Mersch and his colleague Ricardo Flores in the University of Illinois Percussion Division will perform in their faculty recital Saturday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. And they'll also be, Bill will be leading the UI Percussion Ensemble on a concert next Tuesday, the 12th, in the same location. And then Ricardo will lead the U of I Steel Band and World Percussion Ensemble in a concert the following Tuesday, the 19th, also at the Krannert Center. So lots of percussion coming up. And in fact, coming up this hour, I'll be talking with another percussionist who's going to be featured on campus, tonight and tomorrow. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program today is made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. So the pieces we've heard so far are for mallet instruments. On your recital with Ricardo, are you mostly going to be featuring mallets, or are you going to cover the gamut?
We're not playing that many different instruments. They're, as I say, they're the four tangos for marimba and vibraphone. I'm playing one solo marimba piece. Ricardo is doing a piece for amplified maracas and electronics, which is an unusual combination. It's inspired by Venezuelan joropo music.
And I don't have any idea what that is. I guess people need to find out.
Joropo music is a style that, first of all, involves very intricate maraca playing, but it also combines guitar and harp. And there's a little, at the end of the electronic accompaniment, there's a little field recording of a quote of some actual joropo melody going on.
So the maracas, there's a percussion instrument that never comes out to the front of the orchestra, so to speak.
Not too often, probably true.
Except for things like this. Do you? I assume you don't give your students false hopes that the likelihood of their making a living out of playing solo percussion pieces is really high.
Correct. On the other hand, the main thing that both Ricardo and I emphasize is that percussionists have to be extremely versatile in order to be successful. You can't afford to say no to any opportunity that happens to come along, particularly if it's, I don't know how to do that, or I've never played that instrument or that style of music or some such. So because both Ricardo and myself and our colleague, the jazz drums professor Joel Spencer, we all came out of a working freelance background. I was in New York, Joel was in Chicago, Ricardo was in the Akron-Cleveland area. So we're entirely familiar with the employability factor. Mm. And so while we each have certain types of music and styles of music, and I spent a good portion of my life as a concertizing solo marimbist, but it's true that there's not that many opportunities to make a living doing that. Well, it has increased since I started 30 or 35 years ago or so. So the main thing we're focusing on is be versatile, be able to do anything, be able to play in an orchestra, be able to play solo, be able to play in a small combo. Any number of things.
And virtually anything that anybody's going to play on a percussion ensemble concert, even the most diverse, is going to show up in some orchestral concert somewhere at some time.
I'm not sure if I quite follow that, but...
I did. Okay. I did, but whether the listeners did, I don't know. In other words, they'll probably get a chance to play any of those instruments in some real-life context at some point, if they succeed at all as a percussionist.
Yes, I would agree with that. I thought you were going in a more of an orchestral direction, but it's true.
Oh, I did say orchestral.
It's true that we'd have any number of things in percussion ensemble that would not show up in an orchestral situation.
Oh, there's probably some piece or not. Latin especially.
Yeah, okay, granted, every now and then.
Or new music, which is some of what we're going to be talking about coming up.
We are featuring a few other unusual instruments on the concert on Saturday, particularly in this. I have a fairly new piece from a composer from El Salvador, although he's currently working and teaching in Switzerland. He has a piece that combines There's one movement that's largely bass drum and metronomes. There's another movement that's two cuicas, which are Brazilian, can't really call them talking drums, but they sort of make these various pitch squeaks rhythmically. And another movement for two hi-hat, which are small cymbals, foot-operated cymbals. And what's the other movement? Oh, and another movement for the unusual combination of bongos and claves, which are very standard in Latin music.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun concert. Yes. It should be a fun program. Saturday night, 7:30, Ricardo Flores and William Mersch percussionists. Next Tuesday, the 12th, U of I Percussion Ensemble, featuring both the music and performance of Takeyoshi Yoshioka, also joined by Reiko Shiohama. And here is a piece by Yoshioka that will be on that concert, and it is?
It is his three dances for marimba and four percussionists.
And this is the first of them.
The first movement, titled Obsession.
William Mersch, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thanks for having me.
Music by Takeyoshi Yoshioka here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. His music will be featured by the University of Illinois Percussion Ensemble a week from yesterday, Tuesday, November 12th at 7:30. And then there's the faculty recital by Ricardo Flores and William Mersch this coming Saturday, also at 7:30, also at the Krannert Center in Urbana. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled On the Road Again, Cruising Coast to Coast with America's Music. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. Stay tuned next for a conversation with Adam Rudolph, who has had quite a diverse career in jazz, world music, improvisation of many kinds. He is on campus now for well, an event, I guess, that happened with the percussionist yesterday, but he's going to be given a conducted improvisation, a workshop tonight, which we'll tell you more about, and then a concert tomorrow with woodwind and reed player Ralph M. Jones, part of the Sudden Sound Concert Series at the Craner Art Museum on the University of Illinois campus. This is a piece that was improvisationally conducted and composed by Adam Rudolph with his Go Orchestra, Organic Orchestra, and we'll hear more about this in a moment. It's Live and Local. From a CD called Sonic Mandala, that was part seven of an improvised composition performed by Go Organic Orchestra. The conductor, it was Adam Rudolph in this recording. And Adam Rudolph is my guest this portion of Live and Local here on FM 90.9. He's on the University of Illinois campus for a few days. And tonight he is going to be leading a workshop on conducted improvisation, such as the sort you just heard. That is going to happen from 8 until 10 in Smith Memorial Hall, which is the big recital hall just on the south end of the Quad on the University of Illinois campus. South Matthews Avenue in Urbana is how you get there. And also with me is Jason Finkelman, who's curator for the Sudden Sound Concert Series at the Krannert Art Museum on campus. And Adam Rudolph will be joined by woodwind and reed player Ralph M. Jones for a concert tomorrow night on that series, which starts at
7:30.
7:30. Thanks very much. That's the voice of Jason Finkelman. You might hear Jason sometimes on our community radio station here in Champaign-Urbana, WEFT. And Adam Rudolph is with us as well. Thanks, gentlemen, very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
So it was sort of interesting to describe who wrote this piece, so to speak, that we just heard. It says simply, "Music for 33 musicians composed." And this is the term I'd never quite seen before, improvisationally conducted by Adam Rudolph. And that's the topic of your workshop tonight. Mm. I mean, I've heard of improvised music.
Right.
And I've heard of performers, therefore, improvising. But
right.
I haven't necessarily heard of conductors improvising.
Right, right. That's right. Well, and of course, we know even in the Western canon that Bach was a master improviser. And sometimes people think of improvising as either, you know, just making it up or some kind of magical thing that only certain people can do. But improvisation is an art form that we prepare for and we develop our craft for, which I use as a percussionist when I play like tomorrow night. But the idea came to me, I was always interested in orchestral music, very influenced by wonderful composers, and trying to find a way to bring my experience as an improviser, which is about creating in the moment, to an orchestral setting. So, of course, we think about the paradigm of the composer, conductor, orchestra, European paradigm of that about 200-year period as being something that existed forever. But it's one process that can lead to particular kinds of creative results. When you invent new processes for yourself as an artist, you can have new kinds of creative products as a result of it. So this is sort of a reimagining of what an orchestra could be. What I do, just in a nutshell, is I have musical elements having to do with intervals, which is the different note relationships, and rhythms. And I use hand signals. There's up to 10 of these matrices that I use. And I cue them, and I have different ways. I tell people having to do with dynamics, what kind of gesture they can make. And so we can combine these, much like a composer might do in the privacy of their, you know, in quiet, reflective, in the moment, at home when they write the music. But I'm doing it in the moment, kind of in front of everybody, with the hand signals, much the way like, for example, Jackson Pollock created his paintings just in a very spontaneous kind of way like that. But that doesn't mean that you're not prepared or have a high level of skill. So it invites the musicians to have much more input into how they interpret the directions that I give them and the materials that I give them. So the score that we use is the music never sounds the same twice, which to me has a very interesting philosophical implication. Of course, there's the value of hearing your old chestnuts, your favorite pieces of music reinterpreted is a beautiful thing. But it's also very exciting to hear for an audience, I think, to hear music that's being created right then in the cusp at that very moment. It can be a very thrilling and exciting experience for an audience as well.
You mentioned the notion that just because you're improvising doesn't mean that you're not prepared.
That's right.
And I wondered, when you have an ensemble, like this is in the piece we heard, and we're also going to hear another section from the same, I guess you can call it a piece of music.
Sure.
33 musicians. Is there such a thing as a rehearsal with a group like that? And if so, what sort of things do you do?
Yeah, we don't. I guess that's a very good question. And I don't really like to use the word rehearsal. It would be like saying, you and I, let's rehearse this interview we're going to do. wouldn't make any sense. You know, you're asking me a question, I'm responding in the moment. And in fact, it really has to do with, like, can you rehearse for life itself? You know, I mean, life is unfolding in the moment. And that's sort of the philosophical implication of what we do. We never really know what's going to happen next as much as we prepare. So what we do rather than rehearse is, I would say, we prepare. That means for the musicians becoming very familiar with the musical elements that I give them, which has to do with different kinds of scale patterns, rhythm patterns, melodic patterns, melodies that are pre-written. But how it actually gets put together happens in the moment of the concert. And like I said, for the audience, it can be very exciting because if you get on board, you don't know what's going to happen next. And so we prepare. We are prepared. We're not just, quote unquote, making it up. It's a very sort of pragmatic thing about preparing and working with the materials and becoming facile with it.
Do you practice? I mean, Jason was kind enough to hand me a part of, I guess you'd call it the score, which has certain elements. And I imagine part of the time, and at least once somebody's getting to know you initially, is what on earth do I do with this rather interesting diagram here? But also, I wonder if, as part of the practice, explain what gestures mean what,
right.
But also, if I do this and you do that, it's like, well, you could maybe do this in a different way that would produce this kind of effect, or it would be more effective if you did this, or certain, you know, if you give a certain gesture, you want certain groups to do certain things at the same time or something like that.
Right. Well, one of the things that's the musicians are called upon to do that might be different than, for example, somebody playing a through-composed piece of music, is that they need to understand the theoretical underpinnings of what they play. You don't necessarily, to be able to play a Beethoven sonata, there's very in-depth harmonic and formal theoretical underpinnings of it. You don't really have to know that. But in this case, the musicians do have to understand the elements that they're dealing with. And so what they do is they learn those elements in the score. There's levels of understanding that they can have. Of course, when I have a workshop tonight, that's going to let, you know, they're going to get an introduction to it. But some of the musicians I've been working with for over 20 years, like Ralph Jones, I've been actually working with for over 30 years. He has a very, very deep understanding of what these elements are. These elements are not different from what you might hear in someone like Oliver Messiaen's music or Stravinsky's music or Bartok's music, but I'm putting them together in a spontaneous way. What you're looking at in the score, those boxes, what I call matrices, you know, Western European music, that notation is, when you read it, those dots on the lines and spaces that you see in a, you know, if you're looking at a Beethoven score, for example, that's one kind of symbolism that can be used to represent music and tell musicians what to do. I give my musicians choices. That's why this is sort of even has a different kind of social paradigm and implications of it. The musicians can read it forwards. They can read up, right? If you look at those, they can read down. They can read it backwards. You know, they can make combinations of moving through these matrices in different ways, but they're still inside of this sound arena that I've designed. But how they interpret it depends upon what kind of conducting I give them, what kind of, you know, dynamics, gestural gestures I give them, and also, but they get to project their ideas and their voice in it. So the conducting for me is very different than, that's why it's improvisational conducting. It's different than what you might see, Leonard Bernstein doing, for example, because I am responding to what I'm hearing them as they interpret. So we're more like having a dialogue, much more similar to like what we're doing right now. We're not reading from a script. You're not telling me what to say. We're having a dialogue back and forth, and what you say is going to determine, what your question is going to determine my answer. That's how I work with the musicians. So it's even, I think the orchestra has a different social paradigm that it's employing, you know, where the conductor in a traditional Western classical orchestra is kind of like the king, you could say, right? Everybody must obey the conductor. In this case, we have a much more fluid kind of dialogue going on between myself and the musicians involved. What's amazing is that that score, I conduct orchestras in Istanbul, I have one in Sicily, up the Palermo Conservatory, in Naples, I go all over the world and do this. With that same score, the music will sound very different depending upon who these musicians are and their experience and background. And that for me is very, very exciting.
And what instruments they're playing.
And what, yes,
which can
what
vary
exactly.
Infinitely, I mean, I'm sure.
I had an orchestra recently in Istanbul where I had a bunch of musicians playing traditional Turkish instruments as well as Western European classical instruments and five laptop players. You know, it's the organic orchestra can hold. It doesn't even matter in a way what the instruments are. It matters more about who the people are and what they bring to it of themselves.
Here's part two of this CD called Sonic Mandala. I guess you call the composition or the piece Sonic Mandala as well.
Yeah, and it's a sweet. Oh, we're playing the second track now?
Second track, part two.
Great, beautiful.
From Go Organic Orchestra, composed and conducted improvisationally by Adam Rudolph, who's my guest here on Live and Local.
Chica, chica, Jane, chica, chicken, Jane, chica.
Part two out of 11, well, actually, sorry, 12 parts of a piece that became called Sonic Mandala, performed by Go Organic Orchestra, which Adam Rudolph, who was conducting that, explained to me actually before we started this portion of our interview today on Live and Local, that Go Organic Orchestra is not only the name of this ensemble, but also the name of the process that you've been describing.
Well said, yes.
His workshop on conducted improvisation will be tonight from 8 to 10 at Smith Memorial Hall on University of Illinois campus on South Matthews Avenue in Urbana. Tomorrow night, he will be joined by woodwind and reed player Ralph M. Jones for a Sudden Sound concert, which is free to the general public at the Cranet Art Museum on East Peabody Drive in Champaign. Tell me a little bit about Ralph Jones. You said that you've been working with him, for 30 years or something like that.
Yeah, we met originally. Ralph Jones, as I say, one of the greatest woodwind players that you've probably never heard of. He's a fantastic musician, very special. He's one of these musicians who knows how to put magic into every note that he plays, which is something that's really crucial in the improvisational realm, I feel. We met originally in 1974 when we played together at the Ann Arbor Blues and Jazz Festival. And Ralph is from Detroit. I'm from Chicago originally. And over the years, we've done many other projects separately, but we've kind of kept in touch and have together what I would call a particular kind of chemistry, which is, I think, very crucial also in any kind of music, the sort of the human chemistry where we basically can inspire and uplift one another and be free. When you are generating music improvisationally, the idea of what you can generate with form and the feeling of what you do in the music is a hit and miss proposition. And so the chemistry and being able to be free to move anywhere and know that that person can move with you and stay with you and enhance or complement or supplement or expand upon what you're doing is very, very exciting. So we're there to sort of inspire one another. And again, I think for the audience, when people come attend this kind of concert, can be very exciting because once it asks more of the audience in a way, because it means you have to come in and participate and get on board with us moving towards this sort of ever-shifting horizon where we don't know where we're going to go next. And so the audience certainly doesn't know. And it can be very... very exciting and rewarding, I think, and enriching in a very deep way.
And having known each other for so long, you can read each other. Your improvisations, I imagine, take on a very different character than if you met up with some other woodwind reed player, and you might put some of the even if you had notation for this, some of the same things on the page, but
right,
you respond to this person entirely differently.
That's right. We've been developing a language together, I think, which is a very important quality. And we do, of course, reference, we have so many compositions that many that I've composed that Ralph has worked in my octet, my Moving Pictures Octet, in my Go Organic Orchestra. We had a group together for years called Eternal Wind. So we have a shared knowledge of certain of musical materials and also a shared kind of aesthetic sensibility. So what you said is absolutely correct, that we're free to move through through all kinds of different sort of areas, but there's a real understanding and sympathy and empathy between us.
You can hear this, tomorrow night's rendition of the collaboration between Adam Rudolph and Ralph M. Jones on the Sudden Sound Concert Series at the Cranet Art Museum on the University of Illinois campus in Champaign. And I always have to clarify that Cranet Art Museum is not at the Cranet Center for the Performing Arts. It's a different building on campus. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. Adam Rudolph, my guest this portion of our show. And our program's made possible by the Champaign Park District, presenting A Far Cry with guests Stefan Milankovic and Dmitry Kuzov on Thursday, November 14th at 7:30 p.m. at the Virginia Theater. A Far Cry, a self-conducted orchestra, seeks to expand how orchestral music is experienced. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we are at 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana, with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. So part of our improvisation today is going to be that we don't have time to hear this entire next track, so
right,
that'll be
right.
Part of it. This is from a CD between Adam Rudolph and Ralph M. Jones called, wonderful title, Merely a Traveler on the Cosmic Path, this portion. And I assume this is all improvisation here.
Well, improvisation is based upon compositions, yes.
Okay,
yes.
And this one called Wanderings. Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having us.